Okay, so the Tanya is an amazing, amazing book. I guess I'll start with my own personal connection to Tanya. I had the schus, this is now going back probably 15, 16 years ago, to learn Tanya from Rav Moshe Wolfson. Rav Moshe Wolfson is a big tzaddik, he's 90 years old. He's the Mashgiach of Yeshiva Torah V'Das and the Rav of a very, very special shul called Emunas Yisrael in Brooklyn. And he used to teach Tanya in Torah V'Das. And years ago, I approached his students that I wanted to learn Chassidus. And when I would open up a Chassidus Sefer, I tried with Sfas Emes, I didn't understand anything. I didn't understand anything. It was just words. The words didn't make any sense. So I approached Rav Wolfson once after Shabbos, and I asked him for advice how to learn Chassidus. So Rav Wolfson said, what do you need to learn Chassidus for? You want to be a Chassid? You should learn Gemara. You should do Chesed. Daven with Kavana. That's already Chassidus. So I said, no, but I try to learn Sfas Emes. I don't understand anything. I don't understand the Kabbalistic references. I don't understand the assumed knowledge that all the Chassidish Sfarim assume that you had. So he said, if you want to learn Chassidus in terms of a discipline, a Haskalah, knowledge, so he said, you know, there's certain Sfarim that are more explanatory. He quoted Sfas Emes, Tanya, I think he said Pri Tzadik, maybe Shem Yishmuel. He said, but if you really want to be a chassid, learn Daven, do chesed, and have a place in your heart for every single Jew. You have to love every single Jew because he's a Jew. Love him. That's already a chassid. So I didn't give up. I kept asking. And eventually he agreed to teach a group of us from YU, Tanya. He used to teach Tanya in Torah V'Das. He said he would teach us Tanya. So that, for 3 years, I was zoche to learn Tanya from Rav Wolfson. He was in his living room. We sat around his table, and he taught us Tanya. The Tanya really is a tremendous introduction to Chassidus. But it's more than an introduction to Chassidus. The Tanya is really a guide to life. It's an amazing work, how to live life. There are a lot of, today in our generation, we are lucky, a lot of amazing new tzaddikim. It used to be that, you know, some of the tzaddikim, they were the children of tzaddikim. But today, there are tzaddikim that their fathers were regular people. And they're extremely brilliant, very, very pious. And they reveal amazing, amazing insights. One of those tzaddikim, you know, sort of our generation, is my Rebbe, the Stachina Rebbe, Rav Matl Zilber. Rav Matl Zilber is Rav Wolfson's son-in-law. He is a Rebbe of a group of Chassidim, Stachina Chassidim. Stachin was a town in Galicia, a town in Poland. Basically was wiped out during the war, unfortunately. The Rebbe himself survived, Rabbi Horowitz, but almost all the Chassidim were killed. And Rabbi Silver was a student of Rabbi Horowitz, very, very close student of Rabbi Horowitz. And he feels that his mission in life is to spread Chassidus, is to teach Chassidus to wherever he can. And he teaches a lot of Chassidus. He taught Tanya for years and years. I wrote it here from 1998 to 2005, 7 years. He taught Tanya every Thursday night with a group of Bachrim. And he started from Perek Aleph. He went all the way through Igeres HaTshuva. He did Likutei Amarim, Shari Yichud Ve'emuna, Igeres HaTshuva, all the way through. And I listened to all of those Shi'urim. I'm now in the process of trying to produce Svarim based on those shiurim. So this book that I gave to each of you is what I hope will be the first book of probably 7 Svarim in total. It's the first 20 shiurim that my Rebbe gave on Tanya. And we'll use this as a beginning, sort of as a launch pad to get into the Tanya. I want to share something that I heard from Rav Wolfson. Rav Wolfson said that Lubavitchers teach that Akol Min HaShamayim, everything's from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranged that the Tanya was printed in big block letters. Other holy Svarim are many times written in Rashi script. So Lubavitchers teach that the block letters is the Bechina of Torah Shebechsav. So first we need to determine and define the meaning of the term Bechina. The Bechina. What is the meaning of Bechina? It's a very, very important point. And you'll see it a lot in Chassidus HaSvarim. This is a Bechina of that. Bechina means, Rabbi Emanuel Shochat was a big Lubavitcher thinker, a professor at McGill University. So he writes that the definition of the word Bechina is an aspect of.
Of
Torah Shebechsav. But it has to be explained further. What does it mean that something is a Bechina of something? So often, the way we define something is not really absolute. It's defined this way relative to what it's being compared to. So for example, I can say the sun is a mashpia. The sun is a source. The sun gives. Because when I compare the earth to sun, the sun gives light. The sun makes things grow. And the earth is receiving the light and the plants are thereby growing and the fruits are ripening. So I could say that the sun is the mashpia and the earth is the makabel. The earth is the recipient. The earth is receiving. But that's only really a relative definition. If I would look at HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the sun is not a mashpia. Hashem is the mashpia and the sun is makabel. Hashem gives life. And from the life that Hashem is giving, there is a sun. The sun is receiving the life from Hashem. So how do I define sun? Is the sun a recipient or is the sun a giver? Is the sun a mashpia or is the sun a makabel? Well, depends what I'm comparing it to. If I'm comparing the sun, I'm looking at the sun relative to earth, the sun is a mashpia and the earth is a makabel. But if I'm looking at the sun relative to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the mashpia and the sun is a makabel. So, we can say the sun sometimes is a bechina of a mashpia. Namely, if I'm only thinking about the sun and the earth together, then relatively the sun is the mashpia, and the earth, relative to that, is the makabel. But if I'm looking at the sun and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then I would say the sun is the bechina of a makabel. The sun is the recipient, whereas HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the mashpia. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the giver. The idea of Bechina means, I'm not saying this is the absolute definition of the item. I'm saying that the item, based on the following relative realities, can be defined as this type of a concept. So Lubavitchers teach that any sefer, that Min HaShamayim was arranged to be printed in block letters, is a bechina of Torah Shebechsav, is relatively the written Torah, the basic text, the foundation. So let's take the Gemara. If you open up a Gemara, in the center of the column you have the block letters. Now the block letters in the middle of that column are going to have the words of Abaye and Rava and Rabba and Rav Yosef and the words of Rav and Rav Yochanan and Shmuel. That's the bechina of the Torah Shebechsav. That's sort of the basic foundation. What you have in the Rashi letters around it, the commentary of Rashi and the commentary of Tosfos and the Rush in the back, all of that is the Torah Shebechsav on that Torah Shebechsav. Relative to that being the Torah Shebichsav, the rest is Torah Shebaal Peh. The Tanya, the Holy Tanya, is in block letters because the Holy Tanya is the Torah Shebichsav of Chassidus. If you compare the Tanya to the other works of Chassidus, Tanya relative to Pritzad, Tanya relative to Sfas Emes, Tanya relative to Shem Yishmuel, the Tanya is the Torah Shebichsav of Chassidus. It's the foundation. It's the basics. It's the written text. The same way Torah Shebaal Peh pulls meanings out of Torah Shebichsav, all the other works of Chassidus draw a lot from the Tanya. A lot of the new great tzaddikim that are really lighting a new world of Chassidus, people like my Rebbe, Rav Matl Zilber, the Stachina Rebbe, Rav Yitzchak Meir Morgenstern, Yama Chachma in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Tzvi Meir Zilberberg, a lot of these tzaddikim, they're drawing so much from the Tanya. Tanya is the source of it. Rav Yitzchak Meir Morgenstern, in his Sefer Yama Chachma, writes that the Tanya really is the Eitz Chaim. Eitz Chaim is the name of the book that was written by Rav Chaim Vital of the Torah of the Ari HaKadosh. The Ari HaKadosh was the great Mekubal in the 16th century who taught, basically explained what the meaning of the Kabbalah is, what's the meaning of the Zohar, what's the meaning of the Kabbalah. Rav Chaim Vital wrote it down in a sefer called Eitz Chaim. The Tanya took the Eitz Chaim and he concentrated the Eitz Chaim into his book, Tanya. So when we talk about the Eitz Chaim, the reason why Rav Chaim Vital wrote a book and he called it Eitz Chaim, it's because Rav Chaim Vital is teaching us that the Eitz Chaim is the bechina of the Eitz HaChaim that was within Gan Eden. Within Gan Eden, the Eitz Besoch HaGan, the tree in the garden, which is the place of life, that became the Torah of Kabbalah. And the Torah of Kabbalah has now been put into the holy letters of the holy Sefer HaTanya. So the Sefer HaTanya is not just, okay, this is another great holy book. It's more than a great holy book. The Sefer HaTanya is the book of books. The holy Sefer HaTanya is the book that has within it the Derech L'Eitz HaChayim, the path to Chiyus, the path to life, to really live life. It's a whole way of living life. This Sefer opens up for us an amazing new perspective. You're davening, God willing, all of us. Our davening is going to be a different davening in the schus of learning Tanya. Our learning Gemara is going to be a different level of learning Gemara in the schus of learning Tanya. The way we walk down the street is going to be a different way. The way we breathe, the way we eat, the way we talk, the way we think. Because it's going to give us a whole new sense of life. A deeper life. A life of dveikus. A life of attachment to Hashem. Let's begin right away with the Holy Sefer HaTanya. Sefer HaTanya begins with the Shaar Blot. The Shaar Blot is the title page. The title page of the Sefer HaTanya, and this is here on the on page one in this book, I took the text from Chabad.org. You can go to Chabad.org, they have the text of the Tanya in Hebrew, in English, they have Shiurim on every part of Tanya, it's tremendous, Chabad.org, it's gewaldig. Sefer HaTanya begins with Sefer Likutei Amarim. This is a book of a collection of lessons, a collection of teachings. Tanya originally was letters that Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the founder of Lubavitch Chassidim, sent to his Chassidim and collected the letters and he edited them into the book. Chelek Rishon, the first portion, Hanikra B'Shein Sefer Shel Beinonim, is called the Book of Beinonim. It's a very, very important point in the Tanya. We're going to see this a lot. Tanya's writing his book for people that he calls Beinonim. Now, if I were to ask you, define for me the term Beinoni. How would you define Beinoni? What's a Beinoni? What would you say? Without knowing the Tanya, what do you think the word Beinoni means? Yeah, what would you say, Moshe?
Just the middle ground.
Exactly. Someone in the middle. The middle. So you'd say Tzaddik is mostly good, Rasha is mostly bad, Beinoni's in the middle, you know, sometimes he's good, sometimes he's bad. That's Beinoni. Tanya's going to teach us that that's not Beinoni. According to the Tanya, the Beinoni does every single possible mitzvah that he could do. I mean, every waking moment he's learning Torah. He's davening with kavana to the point that he's exhausted at the end of his davening. He's running for all the mitzvahs. If he ever has the thought of, I don't know, you know, znus or something not so pure, he throws it right out of his mind right away. He's, every action is holy. So why is he called a Beinoni? So we'll see. Tanya's going to teach that since in the Pnimius, in the deepest, deepest places, there's a Yetzer Hara, he's still called a Beinoni. But that's Sefer Shel Beinonim. Why would the Tanya write a Sefer Shel Beinonim? Why wouldn't he write a Sefer Shel Tzadikim? The Tanya is going to teach us that each one of us can be a Beinoni. Each one of us can be a Beinoni. Beinoni is attainable to every Jew. Every Jew can reach the level that everything you do is a mitzvah. Every thought, every word, every look, all mitzvahs. And that you're fully surrounded with Kedusha. We may not be able to change our innermost core, but all of our actions can become mitzvos. And the fact that we can't change our innermost core is not so bad. It's not so terrible. There's a certain way that a Beinoni is better than a Tzaddik. You see, a Tzaddik, according to the Tanya, as we will learn, a Tzaddik is a being who not only does good things, he doesn't even want to do bad things. He's not even drawn to the bad things. The tzaddik sees physicality and he wants to go throw up. It makes him sick. He hates it. He finds it revolting. He has it's just so upsetting to him. He has no urge for it at all. A Beinoni has the urge for that which is bad, but conquers it. Always overcomes it. Always redirects it. Always elevates it, always uses it for good. So a Beinoni, in a certain way, does more work than a Tzaddik. Because a Tzaddik who doesn't even have an urge for bad, it doesn't take so much work to avoid bad. The Beinoni, though, who has the urge, but he can conquer the urge and is always conquering, is always doing work. In a certain way, a person who always does work is the best. He's always, always achieving. I have a story here in this book that I saw in a very, very amazing collection about Lieutenant Colonel Emmanuel Moreno. Emmanuel Moreno, Hashem Yikom Damo, was a very, very special soldier. If you talk to Israeli officers, they might say that Emmanuel Moreno was the greatest Jewish warrior since the days of Bar Kokhba. He was a man who was unbelievably brave. He was a genius for languages. And in the Israeli military, they saw that he was so gifted, so driven, working so, so hard, that he was put into a special unit within something called Sayeret Matkal. Sayeret Matkal is the unit of the chief of staff. It's called the General Staff's Reconnaissance Unit. It's the elite of the elite. Bibi Netanyahu was in Sayeret Matkal. Bibi Netanyahu's brother, Yoni Netanyahu, was the commander of Sayeret Matkal. He was killed in Entebbe in Africa. This unit that Emmanuel Moreno was in was the elite within the Sayeret Matkal, even greater than what the Sayeret Matkal was. And what they trained Emmanuel Moreno to do, he spoke more than 20 different dialects of Arabic. He studied the Quran. He was so deeply immersed in the Muslim world and in the Muslim thinking that he went deep, deep, deep into Arab countries as a radical Muslim. He was a preacher in a radical Islamic mosque. He was a man who was so deeply, who penetrated the Muslim networks of Al-Qaeda and Hezbollah and other networks so deeply that it is illegal to publish his picture. The only fallen Israeli soldier whose picture is not published. He was a man who was in every Arab country you can imagine. You think of the Arab country, he was there doing things for Israel, amazing things. Killing terrorists, kidnapping terrorists, getting information, penetrating the highest levels of terrorist organizations. Unbelievable things that he did for Israel. Unbelievable things. Considered things that were unimaginable that someone can do, he did. Very, very brave. With this tremendous bravery, he was a very firm man. It's amazing to think about it. It's a man who is risking his life day after day and learning every day Daf Yomi, learning Tanya every day, learning Likutei Maharan, learning Chafetz Chaim, especially Shmiras HaLasha. It's an amazing thing. You know, he was in Damascus, and you know, by day he's in the mosque, being the preacher at the mosque, and then he's slipping in at night into, you know, some other radical Muslim terrorist and killing the guy. And before he goes to sleep, every day he would learn Shmir Salashar, learn Chafetz Chaim. Amazing, amazing man. Emmanuel Moreno died in the last operation of the Second Lebanon War. He was part of Sayeret Matkal. Got on a helicopter on a Friday night. They flew to the north of Lebanon, trying to do something about missile shipments to Lebanon. The operation succeeded at the beginning. He was wearing a Lebanese army uniform, driving in a Lebanese army jeep. Unfortunately, Hezbollah ambushed the jeep. They shot and they killed him. He died in Lebanon, and he was buried in Israel. During the Shiva, a fellow soldier in Sayeret Matkal sent the following letter to his widow, Maya Moreno. I would like to share with you a conversation I had with Emmanuel on Friday, just a few hours before we boarded the helicopter. I don't remember the exact words, but this is the gist of it. We sat and talked about different things that could happen to us and what we would do in each case. This was just 2 weeks after the sad incident in which a helicopter was hit by a rocket and five soldiers were killed, and so there was a general vague apprehension regarding flying in helicopters over Lebanon. Emmanuel asked me, "So what would you do if, God forbid, our chopper is hit by a missile and you have 5 seconds left until it crashes?" I answered, "I don't know. I guess I would be very sad and scared. I would close my eyes and wait for it to end as quickly and as painlessly as possible." A normal reaction. A person has 5 seconds left to live. There's no way to get out of a burning helicopter. It's crashing. Hope that it'd be quiet. Emmanuel thought for a moment and said, "What I would do, and this is what you should do too, you say, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Declare, I believe God is one." I looked at him and said, okay, you say Shema Yisrael, but what will it give you? No matter what, a second later, the crash will come and we die. And then he answered something that has remained with me until now, and I'm convinced it will remain with me all of my life. If a person has 5 seconds left to live, and those seconds still have significance for him, an aspiration for what comes afterwards, that means that his whole life had meaning. But if the person has 5 seconds left, and he doesn't realize their importance, that they're meaningless, apparently his whole life had no meaning. We don't live just to satisfy our desires. We don't live for momentary pleasures. Our lives are a stage to the next, a step to the next stage. This sentence has been with me from the moment of the terrible incident. It helps me. And that I know, as far as Emmanuel is concerned, his life did not end with the terrible wound that killed him. One stage ended on the way to the next stage. One that is even more important than this one. A stage that can be reached only by living this life. This soldier was learning from Emmanuel Moreno that a Beinoni every second is doing something. Every second is doing something. A certain way, that's even better than a tzaddik. A tzaddik, to some degree, he's doing mitzvahs, but a little bit he's coasting. He doesn't have an urge for bad. The Beinoni has the urge. Every second, he's doing a mitzvah. Every second, there's something that can be done. A person has 5 seconds left to live. He can do the mitzvah of declaring faith. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Those seconds can be so meaningful. Shema Yisrael. To declare faith. As the Tanya is going to teach us, faith is the foundation of all the mitzvos. Kol mitzvascha emuna, David HaMelech says. All mitzvos are really ways to strengthen our feelings of emuna. But the core of it all is emuna. Emuna is what we heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Hashem told us that Moshe Rabbeinu. Because emuna is the most important of all mitzvos. You have 5 seconds to live. In 5 seconds you can do the mitzvah of emuna. It's so meaningful. It's so powerful. That's what a Beinoni every second can do. Maya, the wife of Emmanuel Moreno, related that he used to tell her, don't make such a big deal. Do it. Don't talk about it so much. They would work on a midah. So they'd start working on anger. And then she'd find herself getting upset at her kids. She'd say, Maya, remember the first chapter of Tanya. A person's not an angel. You're a Beinoni. Don't make such a big deal about yourself. You have pride. So what? Big deal. You're just little old Maya Moreno. Keep working on yourself. No one is perfect. The opposite. One who thinks he's perfect and wonders why he has arrogance, that's already arrogance. Oh, why should I be arrogant? I'm perfect. Tanya's saying that he's writing a book for the Beinoni. A Beinoni is like Maya Moreno, like Emmanuel Moreno. To work and work and work. There's something very special about that. Every second we work, we can accomplish something. It's amazing. So the first thing is, this is the book of the Beinonim. Sefer Shel Beinonim. Then the Tanya says, it's melukat mipi svarim. It's compiled from books. And mipi sofrim, and from writers.
What, is this the second part?
This is all the title page still. Still explaining the title page of the Tanya. And he calls it Sefer Shel Beinonim, in the book of the people in the middle. So why the people in the middle? Why not the book of the tzaddikim? Because the Tanya doesn't want to write a book for the tzaddikim. Tzaddikim have their own book. Chassidim say that the book for the tzaddikim is Noam Elimelech. That's the book of the tzaddikim. The Tanya is the book for the Beinonim, because the Beinonim is a level we can all reach. We can all be Beinonim. A Beinoni always has to work. But we can all be that. We can all work. Every second we can exercise freedom of choice and choose to do the right things. Then the Tanya adds, it's Melukat Mipi Svarim. This is a book that's collected from other books, Mipi Sofrim, and writers. Kadoshe Elyon, who are very holy, Nishmas Sam Eden, their soul is in Gan Eden. Very important point. The Tanya didn't come out of nowhere. As I mentioned, as Rav Yitzchak Meir Morgenstern teaches, the Tanya is the Eitz Chaim. The Tanya is the Tree of Life. The Tanya is the Torah of the Ariya Kaddish. The Tanya is Kabbalah. And the Kabbalah is from the Zohar. And the Zohar is from Torah Shebaal Peh. It comes from a Kaddish Baruch Hu. This is Torah from other sources. The Tanya is not going to quote his sources, but he comes from other sources. He wasn't Machadish really anything. The Tanya really wasn't Machadish anything. The Tanya just chose what to shine a light on. Very famous story, you know, there's a nice magazine article that came out about our class, about Neo-Hasidus, about Hasidus in YU and in modern Orthodox circles. It's a very nice article. So there's a famous story, and someone once asked one of the Lubavitcher Rebbes, so what's the Chiddush of Tanya? What's the Chiddush of Chassidus? What was changed? Tanya, Chassidus says, you know, love Hashem. Well, the Torah says, we have to Hashem lokach. Serve Hashem, don't do aveiros. Hashem said, l'man tir yiras al pneichem levilti techto, you should have your Shemayim and not sin. What was the Chiddush? So the Rebbe walked with him and he said, you know, look here. You see here, there's this beautiful flower. How many petals does it have? Oh, I started to count 8 petals. Look at how delicate they are, how fine they are. And he said to him, before I showed you the flower, was the flower there? It was there. But did you appreciate it as much as you appreciate it now? No. Chassidus wasn't to be machadish anything. It was to show us things that are there and to thereby appreciate them more. The flower is there, but are we looking at the flower? Are we appreciating the flower? Chassidus is to take the deepest Torah, the Torah of the Kabbalah, and to bring it as a way to live life, as a derech avoda, how to serve Hashem, based on the Kabbalah. What am I supposed to be doing? How am I supposed to serve Hashem? In that article, there's this story, there's also another story, that the prince was sick, and he couldn't get better. So I called a professor. The professor said the only way to heal the prince is by taking a certain very precious stone and grinding it up and then giving it to the prince to drink. So they said, where will we find such a stone? Certainly now. And they said, oh my gosh, that's the centerpiece of the king's crown. So someone grabbed the centerpiece of the king's crown, he ground up the stone, he gave it to the kid. The kid got better. The centerpiece of the king's crown is the Torah of Kabbalah. That's, wow, the most holy Torah, special Torah. The prince is Am Yisrael. Am Yisrael is sick by the modern world. The modern world, which is filled with so much tumah, phone that becomes a pornographic device, Hashem Yishmerenu. Walking out in the streets and we hear all the kfira, all the heresy all around us. All the nonsense, things like moral relativism, there's no such thing as right and wrong. It's just your opinion and his opinion. Terrorism is also okay. It's just their opinion. It's their preference. All the tumult, there's no right, there's no wrong. All the horrible things in the world, it's so hard. The child, the Jewish nation is sick. The crown had to be torn apart. The Kabbalah has to be taken. It used to be that the Kabbalah was only for the Yechidei Skula, certain people. Kabbalah had to be taken and ground up into pieces. And now all of us can drink it, to be inoculated, to be given the strength to overcome the modern world, to overcome the challenges. Tanya is saying, I'm not coming with anything new. It's been peace far and peace sofer. There are other books, there are other writers. Kedoshi Elyon, holy people, Nishmasam Eden. There's Reb Chaim Vital, there's Reb Yitzchak Luria, there's Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, and there's Reb Akiva, there's Nishmasam Eden. Big tzaddikim, there's Raziel HaMalach, and all these holy, holy tzaddikim. Their books are being now cast into this book. This book is standing on those great mountains, on those great, great, great giants. All that it is to just show you to notice. Notice the flower and the petals on the flower. Don't walk past it. Don't ignore it. Notice the amazing, amazing lessons here. Miyusa, now continuing in the title page. Miyusa al pasuk kikaro beilecha adavar ma'od, based on the sentence kikaro beilecha adavar ma'od beficha ubilvavcha la'asosa. This pasuk is in the book of Dvarim, where Moshe Rabbeinu turns to the Jewish people and says, "Lo b'shamayim yilemor mi yale lanu ha'shamayim v'yikachel lanu v'yashmienu osa v'nasa." The Torah is not in heaven that we should say, "Oh, who's going to go up to heaven to get the Torah for us and teach it to us?" Lo me'ever layam yilemor. The Torah is not on the other side of the ocean that we are going to say, "Oh, who's going to go over to the other side of the ocean, get us the Torah, and bring it back to us?" For rather, it is very close to you. It's in your mouth, it's in your heart to do it. Levayer heitev, says the Tanya, his goal is to explain clearly. Eichu karov ma'od, how it's really close. B'derech arucha, in a long way. Uktzara, and a short way, Be'ezus Hashem Yisbarach, in the merit of with Hashem's help. The Tanya says, his book is the book for the Beinonim. It's the book for all of us. It's the book for the workers. It's not the book for the experts. It's the book for the workers. We can all be workers for Hashem. It's a book founded on great holy books that were before. And it's a book that will explain well this sentence. For this matter is close to you, very close. It's in your mouth, it's in your heart. You can do it. To explain in a long way and to explain in a short way.
So how should I paraphrase the sentence, this pasuk?
Okay, so let's now go to this pasuk. Let's go to this pasuk. Moshe Rabbeinu is about to leave the world. He turns to Am Yisrael. He tells them, "Ki yamitzvah hazos, for this mitzvah, asher anochi mitzavcha hayom, that I am commanding you today, lo nifleisi mimcha, v'lo rechokai. It's not beyond you. It's not far." As Moshe says, "Listen, Jews, it's not so hard. I'm not asking you, in the name of Hashem, to do something which is impossible. It's not impossible. It's not even very difficult. It's not impossible. You don't have to go up into the heavens to do it. I'm not asking you to go fly up to the moon. I'm not asking you to cross the ocean or even have somebody cross the ocean for you. It's very easy. It's very, very easy. It's very close." Change the word easy. "It's very close. It's very doable. It's very doable to fulfill Torah and mitzvos." Now this seems to be a statement that defies reality. Let's think about ourselves. Do we find it easy to fulfill Torah and mitzvos? Is it easy? Let's talk about Talmud Torah. Hashem tells Yeshua, "V'agisa bo yom v'layla," you should meditate on the Torah day and night. Is it easy to meditate on Torah day and night? Is it doable? Or are we people that bottle a lot of time from learning Torah? Is it doable? How many of us, Mamish, learn every second? I mean, there are people who learn every second. Here in our yeshiva, we're Zochen, we have some Rashi yeshiva. I mean, they're amazing, they're learning all the time. One of the Rashi yeshiva, Big Tzaddik, Rav Meir Tursky, we just lost his brother, Rav Moshe Tursky, Zeichat Tzaddik, Kodesh Lebracha, Hashem Yikom Damo. Rav Moshe Tursky was learning Torah every second. Every second. Every second. He came home at night from yeshiva at midnight. From 6:30 in the morning when he left, come home at midnight. Until midnight, you couldn't call him. because he would not interrupt his learning to answer a phone call. He was learning in the Beis Medrash. He didn't go to lunch. He would learn with guys during lunch. He would skip lunch, skip breakfast to learn with guys. He was learning every second. When he was in the car before, you know, all the CDs, he was listening to tapes. Always learning, every second learning. When he'd be walking down the street, he'd be learning, every second learning, every second learning. That's the way we're really all supposed to do, according to the Tanya. The mitzvah of Gisa Boyom Velayla is that every second we should be learning, except if that second we're davening or that second we're doing a mitzvah. That's the mandate, that's the letter of the law according to the Tanya. That's the view of the Bala Tanya. So how could it be Karove Lechadavlo? This is easy. This is close. This is doable. I woke up yesterday. I said to myself, I'm going to learn. I sat down. I spent 2 hours surfing the internet looking at news. That's what I did. But it's Karove Lechadavlo. It's supposed to be easy. So you say, oh, listen, Moshe Rabbeinu, what could you say as an answer to this question? Moshe Rabbeinu said, Karove Lechadavlo. To the generation that left Egypt. Dordea. The children of the Dordea, our generation about to enter Eretz Yisrael, tells them, Torah, this is not so hard. It's a great generation. These are people who saw miracles. They were at Mount Har Sinai. But it's not true, because the Torah is eternal. If Moshe Rabbeinu says, Lo Niflesim Imchav Lo Rechokahi, it's not far, means he's telling me, Zev Reichman, it's Lo Niflesim Lo Rechokahi. Karov Elecha Davar Mo'od, it's close to you. So if Moshe Rabbeinu is telling me, Karov Elecha Davar Mo'od, so that how could it be that it's close to me? It doesn't seem to be close to me. It seems very hard. The Tanya says, I'm going to give you a long way, which if you go down this long way, eventually you'll find that it's Karov Mo'od, it's easy. And I'll even give you derech katzara, a short way. That if you go down this short way, you'll also find that it's easy. So what is the derech katzara? What's this amazing secret? How we can get to a point where we can become beinonim, where we can fulfill every second the mandate of that second. What's this derech katzara? So here I'm going to summarize for you the Tanya, Bezus Hashem Yisbarach, in a couple of sentences. The Tanya is going to teach us that each of us is a Yid. And because we are a Yid, we have a special, special neshama. The Tanya is going to teach that the Jewish neshama, deep down, very, very special. I'm going to explain that a person is not what he appears to be. When I look at Matanel, or I look at Aryeh, so I see the externals. I see a person, eyes and nose and a mouth, talking. Mm-hmm. Truth is, even if I would know all of Aryeh's words, and all of his thoughts, I wouldn't really know the real Aryeh. Because the real Aryeh is deeper than all the words and thoughts. And there is a little piece of Aryeh that's the Yiddish neshama, the Jewish soul. The Jewish soul is really an amazing force. It's a storm. It's a raging fire. It's a magnet of monumental power, which is pulling for Hashem, which wants to connect to Hashem, and wants to be one with Hashem, and wants to serve Hashem, and listen to Hashem, and feels that that is life and nothing else is life. That's the core of Aryeh. That's the core of Matan El. That's the core of each one of us. Because we are Yidden. We are Jews. So you might say, well, why should we have this? And Jose, outside, not have this? Well, the answer is, because each one of us is a direct grandchild of Avraham, and a direct grandchild of Yitzchak, and a direct grandchild of Yaakov, and of Sarah, and of Rivka, and of Rachel, and of Leah. And it is possible for a person to acquire certain traits so deeply that when he dies, his child with a little piece of him has a little bit of that trait in him. Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov were all God. They were all about being one with God. Now, who's Hosea's great-great-great-grandfather? I don't know. Who was around in the times of Avraham? Maybe it was Nimrod. Maybe it was Kedorlaomer.
Maybe it was
Birsha. Maybe it was Bera. We'll get there. It's not Avraham Avinu. And since it's not Avraham Avinu, Hosea might be a nice guy, good guy, but he doesn't have the same inner core as you and I. He doesn't have a Yiddish neshama. He doesn't have a Jewish soul. And now the Tanya says, okay, once we realize this, there's a difference in the level of soul between a Yid and everybody else. Now let's go deeper. The Yiddish neshama is so strong, it's so powerful, it's so demanding of attachment with Hashem. The Yiddish neshama is happy to give away all physical pleasures to stay connected to Hashem. And that's there from birth. That's what he calls the Ahava Mesuteres, the hidden love within every Jew. And he had references to stories in his day. And I added in this book stories that I saw in books from recent vintage. These are facts of history. You can't make this up. It's a fact of history. If you turn to the end of the first chapter, page 11. During the Holocaust, the Jews of Europe were put under terrible, terrible duress. Discriminatory laws, violence, starvation, slave labor, and then wholesale murder. The Jews were shocked that this happened. Shocked beyond belief. One of the reactions to what was going on was a sense, this is so unusual. So, so unusual. No one will believe that it happened. The Nazis will hide it and no one will believe that it happened. We need to create records, historical archives, to preserve what happened so that future generations will know. A man who headed up this effort in the Warsaw Ghetto was a Jewish historian by the name of Immanuel Ringelbaum. His group of historians was called the Einik Shabbos. They collected records, testimonies, documents to try to create an archive. Eventually they were all killed. But before they were killed, they hid their archive in milk crates and they buried it in the Warsaw Ghetto. It was later found. Three of the milk crates were found. The fourth wasn't found. But three were found and they've been published. In one of the milk crates, there is a notebook by a rabbi who's also a historian. His name was Rabbi Shimon Huberband. He died in the war. His notebook was published and it's called Kiddush Hashem. So this is what he writes. The war began August of 1939. September of 1939. Tzatzeres Yimei Tshuva. Between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. A car filled with Nazi German officers shows up in Piotrków, Poland. Piotrków is the city of the Lau family. The former chief rabbi of the state of Israel, Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau, was born in Piotrków. His father was the rabbi of Piotrków. The current chief rabbi of Israel is the son of Rabbi Lau. This happened in Rabbi Lau's shul. He was the chief rabbi. The Germans go to the main shul, and they take more than 30 Sifrei Torah out of the shul. They padlock the shul, and they pile the Sifrei Torah in the yard in front of the shul to destroy Judaism, to humiliate the Jews, to humiliate the Torah. In fact, they put a guard at the entrance to the courtyard of the shul, so that no one dare come in to try to save the Sefer Torah. Now the shul, I can't pronounce these Polish names, the shul was on the Pilsudski in Jerusalemska streets. The other side of the yard actually had houses of Jews who used to go to the shul. So you have these two streets, Pilsudski and Jerusalemski. There's a fence, a door, and a guard to make sure Jews don't come in. Pre-World War II Poland was not filled with observant Jews. Maybe it's presented that way, but the reality was that 70% of pre-World War II Poland was already non-observant. Polish Jews had political parties. It wasn't just that Polish Jews supported the Democrats or the Republicans. The Polish Jews were in parliament. Mayor Shapiro, the founder of Daf Yomi, was a member of the Polish parliament, representing Agudas Yisrael. The largest political party of Jews was the Bund. The Bund was a union, socialist, anti-religious, and anti-Zionist. The Bund was against the idea of moving to Israel and against the idea of observance. I once heard from Rabbi Beryl Wein that the Bund in Vilna sponsored a dinner dance on Kol Nidre night. Kol Nidre night to go dance and eat pork. Completely irreligious. Completely irreligious. In Piotrków, there was a Bund. The head of the Bund was Avram Weishoff. He was a member of the party, the head of the Bund in Piotrków, a member of the city council. He saw what the Germans did. The Germans did this during Aseres Yimei Tshuva. You get to Sukkot, Shmini Atzeres, it starts to rain. The Sifrei Torah now, the ink is running in the streets. They're being terribly, terribly mistreated. But the Germans are saying, don't you dare come in here. We have a guard armed to shoot anyone who tries to come in. What does Avram Weishoff do? Avram Weishoff organizes Bundists. They create a provocation in front of the guard. Under his noses, as he's running to this provocation, they come in from the other side, through the houses. They grab all 30-some Sifrei Torah, take them out, cover them in earthenware, and bury them in the Jewish cemetery, the way the halacha is. An amazing story. Think about it for a second. Here's a political party whose mandate, whose flag, is anti-Judaism, anti-religion. Judaism is an ethnic group. We're here for each other. We should have workers' rights. That's all they're interested in. Shabbos and Kashrus is not something that they do. And here the Germans show up. And the Bundists risk their lives. They could have easily been killed. To give honor to the Torah scroll. What's going on? What's going on, dear friends, is that the hidden love was coming out. The inner neshama was coming out. The inner neshama is a big fire that wants to serve Hashem. It's willing to die for Hashem. It's going to feel that it's sweet to get my brains shot out of my brain, shot out of my skull, if that's the way to serve Hashem. It's a gift. I want to give my life for Hashem. That's what each one of us feels. Each one of us. But what happens? Gemara says, Masechet Sota, Ein Adam Chote Elen Kein Nichnas Baruch Shtus. Person sins because he becomes possessed with a spirit of folly, with a spirit of insanity. For a moment, he's not thinking lucidly. So we're not thinking lucidly, and when we're not thinking with a clear mind, we don't listen to the voice of our inner neshama. But when there's a war, and there are bombs blowing up, and there are Jews who are dying, and the Germans are saying, "I hate the Jews," then the Jew suddenly starts to hear the voice of his inner neshama. And when the Jew hears the voice of his neshama, even though he's Avraham Weisshoff, and he's had many, many, many days of not keeping Torah and mitzvos, he's a tzaddik like Rabbi Akiva. He's a tzaddik like Rabbi Shmuel Kohen Gadol. He's a tzaddik like Chutzpah Samaturgman. He's willing to give his life all for the honor of the Sefer Torah. He's willing to risk his life for the Torah. Says the Tanya, that's true about each of us. Each one of us is a yid. Each one of us has a deep, deep love for Hashem. It's part of our core. Yes, we might be insane. We might be delusional. We might be possessed by a spirit of insanity. But there will be moments of clarity. And in the moment of clarity, I'm willing to die for Hashem. I'm willing to. Every Jew's willing to. Another story from the Holocaust. Again, from Shimon Huberman. This is what he's recording in Warsaw. He writes about the city Kuznets. Kuznets is a big city in Chassidus. Kuznets Magid, the great leader of Polish Chassidim, was in Kuznets, a student in Chais of Lublin. So Hofstein. Kuznets Magid was in Kuznets. He's buried in the cemetery in a special ohel, special tomb with a canopy over it. Pre-war Kuznets, the vice governor of the district, is a veterinarian. Not exactly a great job for a frum yid. Most of what a veterinarian does is to cause animals not to be able to have kids, which is a prohibition in the Torah, sirus. He's a veterinarian and a politician and known as the worst anti-Semite around. Anytime a Jew needs something, he goes to Dr. Gonchar, he doesn't get it. He gets in trouble for asking for it. Everyone always wanted to deal with the Goyim versus dealing with Dr. Gonchar. But there are rumors that Dr. Gonchar is a Jew. He looks Jewish. His wife looks Jewish. The Germans show up in September of 1939. They start grabbing Jews off the streets. You have to come work for us. They grab Dr. Gonchar. You're a Jew. They ask him point blank. He says, "I'm a Jew. I'm a Jew." He doesn't deny it. He says he's a Jew. Unbelievable story. They take him to the secret police. They bring the Torah scroll. They put it in front of him. They say to him, "Tear it and burn it." He was known as the anti-Semite of Kuznets. And he says to the Germans, "I would never commit such a crime. I would never tear this Torah scroll." They start hitting him. They start torturing him. And he refused. They let him go eventually. He turns to his wife. He says, "We can't stay in Kuznets. I'm so embarrassed." He decides to travel to Zelichov. As he's traveling, he's stopped by a guard. The guard says, "I'll only let you cross the bridge, you dirty Jew, if you say, 'I'm a Jew, a pig.'" He said, "I'm a Jew, not a pig." Again, they beat him up. He eventually arrives in Zelichov. He poisoned himself. They bring him back to Kuznets, to the hospital. The Jews tried to save him, but it was too late. He died.
He poisoned himself on purpose?
Yeah. He died. He asked that they say vidui with him and bury him in a Jewish grave, and he was buried right next to the Magid of Kuznets.
Wait, he killed himself, though. He committed suicide. Are you not supposed to, like...
This is the story. This is the facts. We're not sugarcoating reality. This is reality. He died. And writes Rabbi Huberman, during the Holocaust, it's possible that psychologists and those who study the Jewish character will someday be interested in this historic story. What's he saying? He's saying, this is the Tanya. The Tanya teaches that each Jew deep down No matter how far, no matter how assimilated, no matter how estranged, no matter how disconnected, that's only the externals. Deep down there's a fire that wants to be with Hashem. It's willing to die for Hashem. It's willing to die before I touch a Sefer Torah and mistreat it. Willing to die before I say something negative about Am Yisrael. We're the Jewish people. We're the children of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have an amazing soul within us. Every Jew has it deep inside of him. What happens when we're not in touch with that part of us that's deep inside? Sometimes it takes a war to take that deep inside and bring it out. It takes a huge crisis to bring out what's deep inside. But it is deep inside. So says the Tanya, this is the short way. I need to remind myself this is who I am. Who I am is a being willing to die for Hashem. Then I need to say to myself, what's every challenge? Every challenge is a question of physical versus spiritual. I mentioned to you guys yesterday, I wanted to learn yesterday. Instead I spent 2 hours wasted on the internet. So what was I doing? When I was wasting time on the internet, I was indulging my vice of seeing news, getting new information, and enjoying the new news, being in the know. It's a physical pleasure. I chose that physical pleasure over the spiritual pleasure of learning Torah. But one second. The spiritual pleasure of learning Torah, that's my core. I'm willing to die for the spiritual pleasure of learning Torah. I'm willing to die. So I'm not willing to give up 2 hours of being in the know. A person has to tell himself every challenge. I'm Dr. Gonshar. I'm Avram Weisshoff. I'm a Yid. As a Yid, I'm willing to die for Hashem. Hashem's not asking for me right now to die. All he's asking of me right now is to give up a little bit of pleasure. Of course, let me give up a little bit of pleasure. Do what Hashem wants of me. I'd be willing to be beaten by a German to give respect to the Torah scroll. So let me give respect to the Torah scroll that says I should learn Torah every second and learn Torah every second. It's not as bad as being beaten by the German. I'm willing to be beaten by the German. So they should be willing to have the inconvenience of learning Torah every second. Tanya says, this is the short way. The short way to get to the point where it's close, is to be aware of my neshama. To be aware of who I am. To be aware that I'm willing to pay the ultimate price to be true to who I am. So every second I'm being asked to pay small prices to be true to who I am. How hard could that be? I'm willing to pay the ultimate price. Let me pay the small price. This way I'm being true to who I am. This is who my neshama is. This is what I am. It's my soul. I'm going to be true to my soul. So you might ask, well, how do I get in touch with that soul? How do I know it's there? Chassidim teach, if you believe in something, you attach to something. If you want to have a relationship with someone, you have to believe in that person. You have to trust that person. You have to remind yourself and have a emunah that you have an neshama. You have an ahava misuteres. I have a deep love. I have the love that Dr. Gonshar showed. I have the love that Avram Weisshoff showed. I have the love that Yidden throughout history have shown. And if I believe that I have that love, I'll connect to that love. When I connect to that love, karov elecha davar ma'od, observance is very close. B'ficha u'b'lav chalasoso. It's in your heart. It's in your mouth. You can do it. That's the short path the Tanya teaches. The longer path of the Tanya teaches is that through a person thinking a lot about the kedushas Hashem, think a lot about the greatness of Hashem, you'll be overwhelmed with a deep attachment to Hashem. By having a deep sense of attachment to Hashem, that'll inspire the person to listen to Hashem. But that's the longer path. The shorter path is to always come back to the deep love. I have a deep love inside of me. I'm a Yid. As a Yid, I'm willing to die for Hashem. I'm willing to die for Hashem. Every test is not just to die for Hashem. It's much less. Let me be willing to do it. Let me succeed. So Rav Hashem, let's keep studying the time, and hopefully all of us will get closer and closer to this great achievement. Karo Belecha Dov Mahud, Beficho Volvav Chalasosa.